Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much in the way you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy Is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you, Martin, for that wonderful disclaimer. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be an exciting call, and this call is will be presented by John, who is the point of the team, if you would, in that he deals with the litigation of issues, as opposed to, say, Bernie, that deals with putting things in place that are necessary to support the work that John and the team does, or that the work that GW does with regards to correcting your status to have inalienable rights as opposed to mere privileges. So tonight's discussion is going to be something of extreme interest, thank you, and something that is the Achilles heel of most every litigation, and that is the oath of office. You're going to hear tonight from John about how the oath of office is nearly always deficient. And in doing so, you don't have before you an administrator or a judge. You have a man or a woman, acting in what is called the color of office, thereby depriving you of your substantive due process rights. In other words, deprivation of rights under color of law or color of office. So without further ado, it's my sincere pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John. Go ahead, Brother.
Good evening. Thank you, Michael, for your warm and gracious introduction. This evening, we're going to cover a topic that become very touchy in some respects, but is actually a key to both legislative and judicial reform. The topic of tonight's discussion is the oath of office, and the value and the importance of it, and what transpires when it's not adhered to. So, with having said that, we'll start this evening with Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 9 of the Constitution, referring to, and Article 1 deals with the senators and representatives in the House and Senate, etc. Article 2 is the executive. Article 1 is the judiciary. Article 2 is the executive, dealing directly with the president. And then Article 3 is the judiciary. So we have the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. In that order, Articles 1, 2, and 3. And in Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 9, It says, before he entered into the execution of his office, comma, he shall take the following oath of affirmation, quote unquote, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, close quote. Now, if we scroll down to Article 6, Paragraph 3, we have a similar comment. The senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislators and all the executives and judicial officers of the both the United States and the several states. One thing to note here is that it's making a difference between the United States and the several states. Just note that for later on. It shall be bound by an oath of affirmation to support the Constitution. I'm going to read that again. The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, indicating that there is a complete difference between the U.S., United States, all caps, federal government, and the state governments, and to all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, there's that same delineation, shall be bound by oath of affirmation to support this Constitution. So basically what they're saying is that to execute the authority, the rights, the privileges, and amenities of office, they, before they can do so, they must take an oath of office. And to that end, what's extremely critical is that that sometimes goes overlooked is that, holy K-letter, Batman, what happens if that oath of office was violated and it's no longer intact? Now, all of the aforementioned, the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary, all to be removed from office require to be impeached. Before we can take their title away from them, they must be impeached. Now, but John, are you saying that if this person commits a felony against me and he constitutes a clear and present danger to my person, that I have no zero recourse and the judiciary has unqualified judicial immunity, or the senators or representatives do, or even the president? Well, that's a good question. Let me see. If they violate that, and let me answer that. If they violate their oath of office, then technically it's not intact. So that which was required to exercise the authority, rights, privileges, and immunities of their office is no longer there, so they can't legally execute any of the authorities, rights, amenities, or privileges. So they still bear the title of senator or judge or justice or president. But there was nothing about them not being arrestable. And if they've committed a felony, and as Michael Edwards was talking earlier about, deprivation of your civil rights under color of law, 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy, and 18 U.S.C. 242, the actual act, those acts can carry capital punishment, meaning they're first-degree felonies. That person, they will claim, and there's even been some Supreme Court rulings that they uphold that that individual can't be prosecuted until they're impeached. This is not true. If a person, that would mean that the framers of our government and founders of this United States and the framers of the Constitution provided a way so that if somebody was evil and went run amok, that they could do so without equivocation and without any estoppment. This is not true. They can still be arrested. If somebody's being arrested for a felony, and they're resisting arrest, or they constitute an immediate threat to the person making the arrest, under 18 U.S.C. 245, even a local peace officer has the authority of a U.S. Marshal. But if somebody laughs and says, you can't arrest me, and they're threatening or they're belligerent, there are individuals that would propound that, because they, in their, the arresting, individuals, ignorance of what they do or don't have in their purse or their wallet or their pocket, whether it's 38 caliber or just a 22, or a knife, to that end, this person has obviously resisted arrest, constitutes a clear and present danger to them, and, in some people's minds, that individual can be shot, and as violators will be shot and survivors will be prosecuted. But the issue is that the reason why officers all the way up, you know, and even the attorney general have the authority that they have is that because this being a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and referring back to the Declaration of Independence, it made it very, very clear that paragraph 2, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. This, when Abraham Lincoln gave his famous Gettysburg Address, the thing that most people didn't realize was that on that that fabled date, back on November 19, 1863, he was quoting the Declaration of Independence, literally. And so what happens is that the officers that make the arrest, the Deputy Attorney General or the Attorney General or the President or the Judiciary only have that authority because, you know, I could be making a mistake here, but let me take a quick look at this here. It says, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. When the people don't have time, aren't able to, don't feel capable, don't have the resources, or don't have the training or the background, or just don't want to do something, they hire help. And, you know, aviation, air traffic controllers, U.S. forestry workers, Department of Transportation workers, sanitation engineers, governors, presidents, judges, sheriffs. Oh, those last four, they're not just hired help. They're actually only temp help. Those inalienable rights described in the Declaration of Independence and reaffirmed in the Amendment Number 9 of the Constitution. And the thing that's very, very important is that the Ninth Amendment says, the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Speaking directly to a whole myriad of rights, those defined in the Declaration of Independence. Those inalienable rights that are still held by the people were never, ever surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. They confer their authority to that individual by common agreement to allow them to do the job that they've been hired for. And they literally are hired help. The individual person, people, whoever, still retains their right to make a quote-unquote citizen's arrest, which is actually the highest form of arrest. And there's a lot of grace granted. There has to be, because they're not most citizens are not trained in jurisprudence. So when something goes wrong and they have to place somebody under arrest using whatever resources they have available to detain the individual, maybe they don't have hand-to-hand skills, defensive skills training. Maybe the person gets unruly. If the person resists arrest and threatens them with bodily harm, there are those that would suggest and intimate that an individual in that manner informed could be shot resisting arrest or terminated, shot while resisting arrest. And if it happened to be once in the temple, that's usually a fatal event. But the thing is that you have to remember these people are your hired help. If you can arrest and detain them without them becoming adversarial, that's a very good thing. It says a gentle answer turns away wrath. Being calm with these people and saying, look, sir or ma'am, you know, I understand the reason you did this or handed down this decision or you thought it was a good idea, and however noble the sentiments that generated what you did, that's still wrong and still unconstitutional. And which begs the question, could a state legislator or a U.S. legislator be considered committing conspiracy to deprive somebody of their civil rights under color of law under 18 U.S.C. 241 for passing a bill in Congress whether it's a state legislature or a U.S. Congress, say about handguns or et cetera. We'll just use the handguns as a right. And many of you have heard the question that we started using we've tried to purport for the last 36, 38 years is that, Your Honor, where in the Constitution to exclude my right to keep bear a firearm in that schoolyard or school zone, let alone your courtroom? In that one moment, the 17,862 statutes that are currently on the books dealing with some form of gun legislation and the 2,716 appellate court decisions that have codified those, quote, all but into law, all begin to melt away under the light of a thought-provoking question. And what happens is that a state legislator or a federal legislator, if they try to violate your, and we'll use the Second Amendment it's an easy example, then signing that legislation, regardless of how noble the sentiments or their position, they've just conspired with other legislators to deprive you of your civil rights to keep and bear a firearm. Which begs the question, are they now arrestable? Currently, there is nothing that indicates that they are not immediately arrestable. In fact, quite the opposite. There are certain mandates, especially with federal marshals, that if they witness a felony, they're required to detain the individual immediately, regardless of that person's position in office. Some people say, well, John, there's qualified judicial immunity where you can't arrest a judge. Well, Article 3, Section 1, Paragraph 1, Sentence 2, says the judges of both the Supreme and Inferior Courts, comma, shall hold their offices during good behavior, indicating that they must be They have to be coloring between the lines and behaving themselves and playing nice with the other children. If they're not, it's very, very clear, unequivocally, that they're subject to immediate arrest and detention. Now, sometimes getting them to court is a little bit of a toughie. I may have met one or two attorney generals or deputy attorney generals. I'm currently working with three DAGs in three different states right now, working on cases that would curl most people's teeth or their toenails, that they made it very clear that if somebody brought a judge before them, they would have a real hard time processing them into population, into prison population, and seeking, especially when it's a capital crime, you have to have a, or potentially capital, you have to have a grand jury indictment. To be able to, charge them in trial, but under arrest, when they're arrested, they, you witnessed the crime, or somebody else witnessed the crime, and they're being detained. Now, if somebody else witnessed the crime and they got away, now you're going to have to get a warrant for their arrest. And that means that you're going to have to seek a grand jury indictment. But if you're right there when it happens and you choose to make the arrest, well, they are arrested. And now, under the tenets of the due process, you basically have 72 hours to charge them. And in certain situations, a lot of deputy attorney generals, and I've never seen with any regularity any attorney generals that spend their time with the grand jury. It's all, probably one out of 10 times or one out of 7 or 8 times max. The rest of the times it's a deputy attorney general, and for Deputy A, Attorney G, we call them DAGs for short. But you got a DAG there, and they've their comfort level is very, very important to and tantamount to getting this individual, whether they're a senator, representative, a judiciary, or another deputy attorney general. They're going to be challenges with them and them getting this individual into population, meaning them detained and in change from their black suit to the orange suit. What happens is that it's wise to cultivate the relationship with the deputy attorney general or the and if necessary the whole department before you seek to enforce one of these. There's a there was an incident many years ago where an elderly lady, well, excuse me, I don't use that word very much. She was 61 years old at the time, and not just a grandmother, but a great grandmother. And because that was a mile marker, a few signposts back for me, or quite a few actually. I try not to use the elderly thing, but she ended up in court. There was a thing with her daughter, and the judge was dead wrong. She pulled out a Smith & Wesson and proceeded to put the judge under arrest. The bailiff, faster than the bailiff could draw his gun, she pulled out a second one. And had one on the bailiff and one on the judge, and asked the bailiff to kindly unbuckle his belt and drop it on the ground, and then go back and sit down at his desk with his hands over his head. And the judge was acting in a threatening manner, apparently reaching for something behind her bench. And this occurred in Kimball County, Texas. And the little lady shot her. The judge was also female. The judge died later on that day from her wounds. Because she advised, and the stenographer and the court reporter literally was typing as fast as she could, recorded every single word of conversation. And when it was looked at very closely and very carefully, this elderly woman knew her rights. She had quite a few local peace officers and some other bailiffs and marshals holding a firearm on her. And she just stayed there and says, look, this one is under arrest. She's dead, but the bailiff is under arrest. I says, now, do I have to arrest you guys for being complicit in and an accessory after the fact of what this gentleman was preparing to use a firearm in the commission of the illegal act as an accessory? And she used all the right verbiage and everything. It turns out that the local sheriff and the local prosecutor ended up in the courtroom, managed to defuse the situation, and she went home without being charged. That she knew the truth, and the truth kept her free. Only 2 hours or 2.5 hours after they released her without being charged, the judge succumbed to her wounds and passed away in the emergency room. That was back in the 90s. That's been a few years. But the point was still made that the judge violated her oath of office. Clearly, she couldn't exercise the authority's rights or amenities or privileges of the office any longer. Was continuing to do so with belligerence, and then man made God in her own image. I mean, the judge made God in her own image. And it's a little bit tough. You know, sometimes a little bit of power corrupts a little bit, but a lot of bit of power corrupts a lot of it. And so it's very important that when we realize that something has gone beyond that point, that it's necessary to stand up for an individual's rights. And the best thing to do is if you can make an arrest, and one person may I love what she says. She says, and she said this twice in court, and please don't shoot the judge or the bailiff unless they're resisting arrest. And both the judge and the bailiff in both cases, in both those cases, they were both men. All four of the candidates were men. They all went like lambs. It was the strangest thing. Because there was a handful of people with firearms that, you know, they say the most obnoxious thing a nocturnal intruder could hear is, you know, of a pump gauge Mossberg Maverick or Mossberg 500. But the most obnoxious thing that a nocturnal intruder could see is a little red dot hovering on his chest. Well, apparently they had 6 or 8 little red dots hovering on both in one of those cases. And as the judge realized that he was being told he was under arrest, and this was a lady that was making it very, very clear to him, she explained to him why, and she pleaded with him, says, look, you know, please don't resist arrest. I need you to make it to trial. She was pleading with him. And somebody, apparently something about knocked over a chair or something, there was a little disruption. She says, hold everybody, hold your fire. Don't shoot the judge or the bailiff unless they're resisting arrest. You know, and apparently at that juncture, they both put up their hands and went like lambs. You know, but the issue is that they've violated the oath of office. And she was very keen and very clear on that. And that was what precipitated her actions. The hired help will get away with whatever you allow whatever the employer will allow them to get away with. There's a group of four or five individuals on a factory floor when the owner of the factory walks up and turns the corner and says, "What are you guys doing? How come you're not working?" And one of them scratches his head and looks at the factory owner right in the eye and says, "We didn't know you were watching." Ouch. The hired help will get away with whatever you allow them to get away with. And to that end, you know, we've had multiple individuals that have made statements in history about how the how our government is to be held. One young elderly lady asked Ben Franklin as they were leaving the Second Continental Congress, she says, "What kind of government have you given us, good sir?" He says, "A republic, if you have the temerity of character to keep it." Thomas Jefferson wrote, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants." The thing that's very, very important is that individuals can live their life standing up with liberty or on their knees in submission. And it's, you know, when we hire help and give them power to do certain tasks and we give them the keys to access the resources that is necessary to accomplish those tasks, it's very, very important to also realize that you have to have checks and balances. And currently we're working with a judge that he 9 years ago, shortly before his wife passed away, handed down a decision about prosecutorial immunity. And he's right now a senior justice in U.S. District Court. And we're working on the what it's going to take to see if we can get him detained or invited to a discussion about his irreverent behavior. Another judiciary commented, and I use the term gown to refer to the feminine and gavel to refer to the masculine. But this gown said, I know him. He's paraphrased. He's a very bad man and needs to have his sorry, miserable liberty and life taken away from him. And I says, I can't believe you said that. And she told me, John, says, you have no idea what this guy has done and does behind closed doors to how many people. And he's violated his oath of office, but nobody, he's high enough up that nobody thinks that they can have him prosecuted. If there were 20 or 30 individual events in America where a judge violating their oath of office or a senator or a representative violating their oath of office was placed under arrest, resisted arrest, and got dead, when somebody now says, I'm sorry, you violated your oath of office, you're under arrest, there would be an unequivocal second take on their idea of that possibly resisting arrest. And the thing is that the oath of office to swear and uphold the Constitution is unequivocal, and is when we look at the Article 6, Paragraph 3, it says Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 9 makes it very, very clear that what the president is required, or any potential candidate for presidency, Oh, please note that it says also in paragraph 7 that all candidates must be natural-born citizens, meaning that they're not native-born. They have to be born of from parents that were already citizens. And so in that respect, KDH, Kamala Dewell Harris, does not technically qualify, neither as did Barack Obama. We actually have a default judgment against Kamala Dewell Harris, but if she was taken out, anybody know who would be the person to next step up in her place? And the thing is that yes, it's Nancy, and to that end, if we served on KDH right now, Nancy is three times as evil. She's committed three times the evil that KDH has. At this juncture, it's very, very important that in Article 6, Paragraph 3, it says the senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislators, and all executive and judicial officers, both the United States and several states, should be bound by an oath or affirmation to support the Constitution. That's all the hired help. We cannot allow worthy employers. It'd be nice to live the life of Riley, and find a chaise lounge chair next to the pool and a tall pitcher of lemonade and the latest sports page. But while our fellow citizens continue to perish in slavery and rude usurpment of their both civil and God-given rights, there's just something wrong about that. For those of you who believe in an intelligent designer, to me, I'm also, amongst other things, besides a jurisprudent, I'm a practical physicist. And to me, there's more than sufficient evidence in this creation, this third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth, that there was an intelligent designer of this universe. And of all the information that's propounded in historical texts, in both non-religious and religious texts, the one that is the most accurate to me is the one held in the Hebraic Christian text that most people commonly refer to as the Bible or the Torah. and to that end, I may not be a conspiracy theorist. I may be a former conspirer. I worked in the black sector after I got out of the Air Force in 76 for a while. And I've seen things. I saw satellite imagery of that large boat in the mountains of Ararat before the volcanic eruption that carried it down the hill and broke it into multiple pieces. And yes, I have actually seen and had my hands on some of the wood and the rivets from that. I've been within 80 feet of the true Ark of the Covenant. I've seen satellite imagery of when you walk across a field or a path. When I was in Boy Scouts back in the 70s, part of the training for Scoutmasters that I used to do in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s was that we had wilderness training, and we used to teach them to stay on the path, because when you walk off the path, you compress the soil, and the grains and cereals that would come up after that now have a harder time coming up. And there were places where we crossed through a cut short a path, and 2 years later, while leading another 13-day John Muir Trail long truck, that very route that we took was now a path. And we beat down the grasses passing it. There's a evidence just like this that can be actually, what happens is that is the during the day the sun radiates the heat onto the photonic energy onto the soil. At night, the compressed soil radiates that heat back out at a different irregular wet bandwidth than the surrounding soil. And there's evidence of a huge throng that marched from Egypt down along the Red Sea and then stopped. It just stops right in the middle of nowhere. And this evidence is available still to this day in the satellite thermograph imagery. It picks up on the opposite side of the Red Sea. And from the satellite imagery, there, you know, most of you have probably seen rivers where there's rocks that look like they have been in a rock polisher, but they're in the stream bed. What happens is the water carrying the aggregate slowly tumbles them, and it's just like they've been in a rock tumbler because they're nice and smooth. Well, there's a huge boulder halfway up a mountain 93 miles from the next nearest electric or light bulb or water source that there was a source of water that came from it that apparently ran for many years, and the stream bed evidence is completely undeniable from the satellite imagery, which right now, if you use Google Earth, it's been photoshopped out. But in the day, I've seen that. And I've flown over that at low altitude personally. I was the pilot. There's too much evidence that there is a intelligent designer out there, and however you want to refer to him, whether it's Yahweh, God, space aliens, ET, you know, spirit beings, whatever, Yeshua, that entity is out there. And the text from that entity says, no greater love hath a man than to give his life for his fellow person. That's paraphrased from the actual. When we're thinking about restoring liberty to this country, Thomas Jefferson's quotation, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. I don't like, there's two things that don't impress me, blood and pain, especially my own. I don't want to fight. I saw that movie, Mel Gibson, The Patriot. I would rather live my life in peace. But if it's necessary to do what's right and correct, I want to take the peaceful path first. But if it's gone way past that and there's no stopping it, then why do we still live? It's why do we want to live? And if we're that intelligent designer said that, and there will come a day when many say, look what I did for you. He'll say, I have no knowledge of that, paraphrased, away from me into destruction. Because when I was naked, you clothed me not. When I was hungry, you fed me not. When I was hungry, when I was in prison, you visited me not. But when do we see you like this? So I assure you, whatever you did, this is the least these little ones, you did this for me. When you, of nobility and consideration and deference, to the Most High King, serve your fellow person. Serve the Most High King by serving your fellow person. Some people talk about their great service to this intelligent designer, and they're cruel to their wives and their family and other people, but they've got this ministry, quote unquote. Well, how you treat your fellow person, you're treating that intelligent designer. He made it very clear, and that when we, in an effort to restore liberty to America, when we give selflessly and unselfishly to our fellow person for that greater good, I believe that intelligent designer is completely aware of everything that's going on and that he prospers that. So something that's very, very important is that when we recognize that somebody has violated their oath of office, you have to ask yourself, if they've already gone to this limit, or to that extent. What are they considering doing next? And what is my responsibility to prevent them from mistreating or destroying other individuals, their lives or their liberty? And is there something I can do something about that? You have to ask yourself that question. Give me the strength to change the things I can't, the understanding to know what I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. A couple of things. Number one, you never bring a knife to a gunfight. You never try to do something that you obviously don't have the capacity to do. Two, if you do have the capacity to make a difference, whether it's file a pleading in court or whatever, you know, or seek a grand jury hearing and see if you can get a grand jury indictment handed down, however you do it, absolutely do with all your might. And the more citizens that seek to bring liberty back to America, the better off we'll be. But when you stop and think about it, there's only a few minutes and seconds in life. And presently in recorded history, there are 6,000 years. And if we took that 6,000 years and likened it to a day in a man's life, let's just say that a man lives 100 years, round numbers. Well, 6,000 would be, divided by 100 would be 60. So let's just say that there's a man's life amounts to 1 minute of those 60. And if there are 24 hours in a day, there's 24 minutes in those 24 hours. Could you stand up in a roll call vote of those at the Declaration, like the men at the Declaration of Independence, that knew signing that document would be their death warrant if it didn't go over, but they were willing to give up their lives, their wives, their children, their wealth to found this nation in a roll call vote? Could you stand up as number 57? And for those 24 minutes, that would be the equivalent of a well-lived long lifespan. If you could put up with being abused, mistreated, unkind, unpleasantries done to you, you being whipped and scourged and cut and brutalized, could you handle 24 minutes of that so you could enjoy the other 23 hours and 36 minutes of that day in utter pure bliss? Oh, by the way, ding, 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 bonus points. At the end of that 24 minutes, you get a brand new body. However long you should live, when we see a violation of the individual's oath of office, we need to handle legislative reform, judicial reform, executive reform, is to immediately have those individuals detain and charge them so that they don't go wantonly run amok like the dishonorable senator from Hawaii did during the hearings on the 16th of 2020 there, in 2021 there, when we she berated the then still president, and screamed at the top of her lungs that he had precipitated that riot when he had done no such thing. She acted like she had unequivocal evidence and that she was a personal witness. And she was yelling at the top of her lungs from the floor. It's very, very important that when we come across individuals like that, that are wantonly getting, believe their own press and getting away with what they say, that we learn whatever it takes to bring them to justice. And to that end, I encourage every one of you to not just get your status corrected in the computer, but get your education corrected so that you know what is right, what is wrong, and that you take the time to forge associations so that when something does go south in your jurisdiction, that you have not just the knowledge and the know-how, but you have the support group and the infrastructure to take individuals, whether they just be a city worker or a state or U.S. legislator, to task. With that, my time has now come to a close. We will now enter the question and answer time, and although we do encourage you to try to stay on topic with your Q&A during a specific call, you are free to cuss or discuss whatever topic you wish. With that, back to you, Michael.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Star 2. Star is just underneath number 7 on your keypad. Star 2. That will raise your hand on a board that I'm looking at, and I will unmute your phone in the order of people that press it. Press their star 2 button, and you may ask or make a statement either or to John about tonight's call or whatever else is on your mind. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, look to the center right of your monitor. You will see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left click inside of the rectangle and type away your comment or question. I'll be glad to give voice to your comment or question for you. So let me start off, John, by asking the first question. Then we'll move to Ed from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. My first question is, if in doing research on a judge that adjudicated a matter, say, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and you learned that the oath of office that the judge had at that time was not sufficient for him to have standing as a judge, can that be attacked 15, 20 years later? Can that judgment be attacked?
Well, let me ask, let me pose a question or two, may I?
Sure.
If the judiciary did not have justiciable standing to make the ruling, then can the ruling be valid?
Absolutely not.
There's your answer.
Okay. Just like a challenge for jurisdiction. Jurisdiction can be challenged at any time, 20 years after the fact, if you want. All right. First question is Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Ed. Hi, John.
Good evening, Ed.
I have had a tax lien. I've had one for a considerable amount of money. Well, for me, it's a considerable amount of money. And it was sitting in the courthouse for 10 years, a little over 10 years now. And I was uncollectible for all that time and not having assets other than my home that I live in, which is modest. But to put a lien on the home and then I have the lien sitting here in front of me, a certified copy of it, and it was supposed to release on the 8th of November here, last week. The 8th. They were supposed to, their last day for refiling was on the 7th. And the date of the assessment was all the way back on October 8th of 2012. And I've experienced pretty much lies going all through this process with them. They told me that the date of the assessment was originally in July, and this says October and any number of other things, too. But now I went down because I'm supposed to get a little bit of money, but it has to go into a bank, or so my brother was saying that. So I want to make sure the lien is released before I put it into a bank and they give it to the IRS. So I go down to the courthouse and look, and there's my lien. Much of it is the same, but it said that it was established in 2013. And so they think down at the courthouse, local county courthouse, that it's going on till next year sometime. But meanwhile, the stuff I have says that it's released, and there's a statement on the thing that reads, important release information for each assessment listed below, unless notice of a lien is refiled by the date given in column E being the last day for refiling. This notice shall, on the day following such date, operate as a certificate of release as defined in IRC 6325A. I went back and read 6325 and et cetera, et cetera. And as I read this, the notice of a federal tax lien, in my case anyways, is the release form. And if I take this in, these women at the courthouse should take it out of their computer so that it doesn't show up and prevent me from anything now. Am I correct on that assumption?
There's release of lien, you can go get that adjudicated, and it's wise to get it adjudicated, meaning get the blessing of a judge in your John Q. I'm a judge. I just stamped this as valid the release of lien because the lien was not refiled. That's extremely valid and the correct way to handle that. If you don't take the action yourself, who's going to do it for you? And if that is never recorded, then what happens is that I have seen cases where the IRS, well beyond the statute of limitation, has referred a case to a collection agency, a non-governmental entity for collections. And this one case they referred to seven times. The eighth time, we finally seem to have stopped it. But there was on a IRS debt that was 21 years old, eventually, when it was finally stopped. But they kept passing it. They kept passing it around well beyond the 7-year statute of limitations on that. There's some that are 10, some that are only 7. But at this juncture, I would, if I was you, I would absolutely go down and I would get, if you're not comfortable with it, I would get some help preparing the documentation for a judge to sign, and the motion, at this juncture, there are some judiciary that will accept what's called an ex parte filing, meaning that you can do it without the benefit of the other party being present, because there is no evidence on the record. They have lost their standing. And some judiciary have accepted that.
Okay. In Pennsylvania, the office that it's filed in is the prothonotary's office. And I don't even know what the word prothonotary means. I could look it up again. But I handled my own case. I lost it, though. Incidentally, I learned about validating oaths of office the summer after the year I got back out of jail. And I've used that once in my own family's life to great, wonderful effect. anyways, since that's in the local, since I got the document from the federal government or IRS, whatever the case may be there, then I, and it's filed in the state, and it's the state, the county court, that's not releasing it, I could write up something and enter it into the court, the local common pleas court, against the prosecutor's office.
Yes.
Good.
And in your jurisdiction, the Court of Common Pleas is the correct jurisdiction.
That's what I thought, yeah. That's what I thought. I had a little debate with myself as to whether it was Superior Court or Common Pleas Court.
You had a little debate with yourself.
Yeah. Going
you ever
back.
See that T-shirt? You ever see a T-shirt that says, yes, I talk to myself. Sometimes I need expert advice. Yeah. I know. Bad joke.
That and the dog.
Yeah. We'd love to help you out, lady. Which way did you come in? Right. have we kind of answered your question there?
Yeah. I can file for judgment with the in common pleas court.
Yep.
I might need some help in getting that started, but I've never... I have filed a complaint once, but it's... So I would just file a complaint.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Civil complaint, and that would be the end of it. But if they still refuse, well, I'm sure the judge will release it. Okay. Thank you.
Well, sir, take care, and you have yourself a wonderful evening. Michael, did you have any comments on that one real quick?
No, I thought you. I thought it was all fine.
Okay.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate that. Well, again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, we're going to have a slow evening tonight and go home early, which is okay with me because I'm ready and tired to go to bed. But I will stay up for you. Press star 2 on your keypad. And while we're doing that, I'm going to check with Freedom's Radio. See if anyone there has written in. Yeah, Karen writes in, I just want to thank John, well, for his time and educating us. I learned something each time I listen. I did not realize how ignorant I was of the law and my country until being here. Thank you and God bless you. Thank you, Karen. That was very sweet of you.
Thank you for your kind
that's
words, Karen.
Yeah, that's great. We'll
try to live up to the kind and gracious accolades you wanted us with.
Okay, one more time, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad. Raise your hand. Otherwise, we will go home early tonight. We have two new customers. Say, hey, Miss Jennifer, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Hi, John.
Good evening, young lady. How are you?
Great. I just want to thank you also for helping me with my speeding ticket and how I got off and all the other things you're helping me with and all the information you're sharing with everyone. I think it's very noble of you, and I just wanted to thank you also.
Well,
it's
been an honor and privilege being some asset or blessing for you. But remember, though an individual seeks an audience with the judge, it's from the intelligent designer, the creator, that he or she gets justice. And though an individual seeks an audience with a doctor, it's from the intelligent designer, the creator, that they receive healing. So I can't take any credit there. All I can say is God's grace strikes again. In spite of me.
Well, I did feel God's grace throughout the whole event, and it didn't go the way I was originally hoping it would go, but at the end, I realized the way it went was the best way possible it could have gone, and so how can we not thank God for that?
You understand why it went the way it did, correct?
Yeah.
They could not risk you actually coming to court and then being required to apply what you were saying, let me rephrase that. There are individuals that they work with and that they have respectfully respond to that would probably not have considered it well if that ended up in court and adjudicated in the path that it went. So getting it dismissed before it got into court was their only option.
Right. And that's what I was wanting to achieve. But originally, I had just wanted to be tested with it on the road, you know, using the card and having the cop pull me over and then telling me I could go, but I would have no written proof that that happened. So the way that it did happen was I had a letter from the court, from the judge, dismissing the case, which is written proof that happened, and that's more evidence I can share with non-believers, so to say.
Yeah, as vague as they tried to make that letter,
right.
It still is a letter.
Right. Yep. And I had to get brave and go to court, which I didn't want to do, but I did find that I got brave and even in the court, so I felt great due to your education. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's two things that no courtroom or judge ever wants to have go on within his courtroom. One is short term, the other is long term. The short term is he never wants somebody in his courtroom that is arguing his arguments are founded in law or her arguments are founded in law. He cannot deal with that because courts are show. It's theater for the most part. And people coming into a courtroom are greatly fearful of what's going on, lack the knowledge of what's going on, and easily succumb to the theater that a judge may put you through in regards to ranting and raving is one thing, over-talking you, not giving you the opportunity to articulate and so forth. And the list goes on and on and on. They cannot stand someone in the courtroom making affirmative defenses in law. That's actually in law. And the second thing is, and it's more of an issue with the prosecutor who represents the state, who has a budget that they have to keep in line in order to be profitable, when there is a, belligerent litigator as a defendant. And they have to keep at it. You know, they've got a $150 ticket on the table or $450 ticket on the table, and you've already racked up $10,000 in legal fees for them. You're somebody they want to get rid of. Those are the two primary things that I'm aware of. Or maybe John can chime in on anything else or lift off of that. John?
No, you've done a good job of covering that one. There's one tertiary issue, and that's that when somebody, as we already covered, when somebody comes in front of witnesses, i.e. other defendants in the courtroom, all of a sudden has a case like Jennifer had, and they actually attempt to adjudicate it, their credibility begins to fade very quickly. On the show that they're putting up, and like you said, it is a show.
Yeah, it is. I confess, back in my 20s, early 30s, and this is before I was married and after I was married, I would go into traffic court because that was a place where I could, well, for me, I was having fun, but I also could hone my skills. And, you know, it just darndest things that officers wouldn't show up when they were supposed to show up for testimony, and all sorts of stuff happened. So what was the other thing I wanted to say? That's important. Oh, Jennifer, why don't you, if you've got a few bucks lying around, if you are really successful picking up some aluminum cans and some glass bottles, why don't you take your letter that you got redacted and put it into the newspaper as an advertisement and say, if you're curious as to how my traffic ticket got dismissed, quote, for the, what was that quote, for the benefit of justice or something, end quote, call 1-800-625-4250. really upset.
Your number?
Yeah, give my 800 number. That's what it's out there for, to, for public publication.
Would that be too haughty, John?
You mean sitting there drooling, wringing your hands over the morbidly dead entity that failed to successfully prosecute you? Yeah, that would be, that might be a teeny bit haughty.
I'm just wondering whether it's something that I should do or shouldn't do.
I just want to have fun.
Yeah. you could do it. I'll leave that one to Michael.
let me ask you, John. Now, there is no injury direct as far as there is injury to Jennifer Sue, but because of her time wasted and spent and so forth, what would happen? Would she be in a position to file a deprivation of rights under color of law against the officer that pulled her over?
Now, the officer, you have to ask yourself a couple of questions. And we asked this question in the briefs that we prepared for Jennifer. Does the officer know that this is or is not a state citizen? Before
ignorance
they
is no
pull
excuse
them over.
For the law. Ignorance is no excuse
yeah.
for the law.
Right. There's the officer doesn't have a clue before he pulls over. Now that Jennifer's got her status corrected and she there's some things that show up that now. She has a way to advise the officer, at least early on, what her status is. And to that end, if the officer is aware of her status and then continues inappropriately, then that would be immediately a 42 U.S.C. 1983 filing, which is basically the same thing, deprivation of civil rights under color of law, except that this is for civil damages.
Jennifer, did you advise the law enforcement officer when he pulled you over?
Well, at the time, I didn't. I had only just completed my affidavit and sent it to you, and I didn't know that. I hadn't even heard that you could use that in your car, so I didn't have anything on me. So I just did the normal thing and gave them my license
okay.
and registration, and that's why I ended up in court in the first place, which was actually a better scenario because I got the written proof of dismissal at the end
right.
where he could have just said, see you later.
Sure. Well, that law enforcement officer just missed the bullet. Terrific. All right. Anything else from anybody else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. Let me refresh. Make sure. Let me check Freedoms Radio one more time. And again, thank you, Karen, for your kind words. Well, thank you, John. Wonderful call tonight, and I certainly appreciated it. And I want to thank everyone for joining us. Please tell your friends about this call. give them the opportunity to hear what their status of citizenship means to them to be free, as our founding fathers intended for us to be free, and not the property or franchise of the United States government, which is exactly what it is. Whoa, Big Ed, welcome to the call. Go ahead, buddy.
Is this recording somewhere we can pull it back up?
Yes, sir, it is. They all are.
Thank you. I'm done. Thank you.
No, you're not done. I got to tell you where it is so I can tell everybody where it is. If you go to www.correctmystatus.com, correctmystatus.com, it will redirect you to an older website titled AmericanByBirth.com. And when you get there, you'll see a tab that says Archives. You click on that tab, and then you'll see where you can listen to it by streaming it on your computer, or you can download it to share with others. Or you can share others this website, whichever pleases you. Okay, Big Ed?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And all have a good night. Thank you all for joining us this evening. It's been a wonderful night. Join us tomorrow night when Mr. Slevin will return and share with you how you can rearrange your affairs. I like that expression. I'm copying it from Bernie's. By, if you're an employee, you can operate through an LLC, this unique LLC, that strips all of the tax liability from it. And Mr. Slevin and his team will assist you going to your employer with crunched numbers to show the employer that by hiring your LLC instead of you, he'll save money even when he's paying you more money through the LLC than what he was paying you as an employee. And just also remember that LLCs have deductions for nearly everything and anything. It's a business write-off for everything and anything that you do, most likely, including your trip back and forth to work, believe it or not. So until then, tomorrow night, everybody show up, be there, be square, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.